listening to Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby.
You are listening to Fanboy Versus. Welcome. This week, it's Fanboy Versus ourselves because we have no idea what we're facing.
Do we ever have an idea what we're facing?
Yeah. So, basically, yeah, we're fighting ourselves. So
I was versus C2E2 yesterday.
We could go with that.
Yeah, so that'll C2E2. Do.
Yeah, because there's a bunch of news apparently out of that, which we're going to get to, and we're going to talk about this week's comics. So let's get into the news part, and I'm going to hand it over to McFeely to give us a rundown of what was the big news out of C2E2, what's exciting, what's going on. Bring it on.
Well, there's a bunch of different stuff, you know, but I'm... I guess the main thing we really learned was what Marvel planned to do with Steve Rogers after Siegeons, which is
sorry,
which is the Brubaker is launching him into a series called Steve Rogers Super Soldier. I don't think we know whether it's an ongoing or a mini yet.
It's a mini, 4-issue.
Oh, well, fair enough then. But there is actually 4-issue mini. You're quite right. Essentially, he's not becoming Cap again yet, and I have to say that personally, I'm in support of that.
Boo. Brian, boo.
Who do you say? Interesting.
Boo are yeah. No.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a different choice in that it's not the expected one. I don't know that it's a great one, but it's different.
It goes a further step in neutering Steve Rogers in the minds of Marvel fans, and that's exactly what Ed Brubaker wants, because Ed Brubaker sucks.
So does this mean that I can cancel the Cap book again since Steve Rogers is not going to be in it?
Yes.
Very good. Another book is gone.
Save your
money. If you don't think this is part of some kind of circular thing Brubaker's got planned to bring Cap back into the Cap role just in time for the film to come out.
Right.
So I will wait to buy Captain America again just before the movie comes back.
Fair enough.
It comes out, so.
Well, I have nothing really to say about that. I enjoy Brubaker's work, and I'm still going to pick this up. And I like the fact that he's not resuming the Cap mantle right away, because everybody just sort of assumed he would. And I think Bucky's grown into enough of a character in his own right that he shouldn't just be shuffled off immediately as soon as Cap comes back. And it's been drawn by Dale Eaglesham as well, so that's good.
If he shuffles off his mortal coil, that would be the way to...
Exactly.
They tried that already. It didn't stick.
Well, Siege 4 hasn't come out yet. So you hope that.
Oh, well, what's going to be happening in Captain America? If Siege
yeah, that would really make that series.
It was a breakdown and just like put a plural on it, so it's just Captain America's.
I buy that.
Captain America Corps.
Well, that was pretty much the Captain America Siege tie-in from this week. Yeah. But anyway,
could just have like a political split, and it could be like there's like the blue state Captain America and the red state Captain America.
Oh, Captain America East, Captain America West. I'll buy that.
Oh, God.
Red, blue, Cap Red, and Cap Blue.
This is that would basically be the 50s Captain America and Steve Rogers. That's basically what we would have.
That's true. They've already been kind of doing that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, 50s Cap is... There's a couple of 50s Caps. Actually, that was another piece of news, is that one of the 50s Caps is getting his own miniseries as well.
Which one?
You could have the 50s Cap and the Red State Captain America.
Jeff Mace. Jeff Mace, the third Cap.
I don't even remember that one.
Nobody would. He's one of those intermediate characters that they created retroactively to explain how there were comics about Cap published in the 50s, Stan Lee retconned him being frozen in the 40s.
Yeah, the 50s Cap that I'm familiar with is the one that debuted in issue 120-something or whatever it was back in the 70s.
Yeah, that's the Grand Director, the one who's when it went crazy. And
yeah.
Yeah, and he's running around as the Buddy in Cap right now, isn't he?
I don't know.
I'm
several issues back on Cap.
Well, I mean, he factored into the death of Captain America storyline, and I'm a little behind on my Cap because I get it in the trade paperbacks. But I believe that the grand director, which is the only name we know him by these days, is the bad guy right now.
There is like the evil 50s cap. He is in the current issue. I don't know which one it is, though.
You're breaking up Triple.
That's him. That's the guy.
Come back to us, Triple.
That's the commie-busting cap.
So
yeah, that's happening on the cap front.
What else in the news? What else is going on?
What else happened in the news?
Secret Avengers?
Yeah, we learned the lineup of Secret Avengers. Now, over the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing 1 and 2 revealed at a go in the teaser pages in Marvel Universe. But we saw 2 weeks ago, we saw Beast and War Machine. This past week, we've got Moon Knight and Valkyrie. And then the presentation revealed that the remaining members are Steve Rogers in his super soldier costume and Nova.
You sure this ain't the Defenders?
Wow. Yeah, this is like nobody Avengers.
God.
Well, that's the point. Yeah, that's the point.
I care nothing about this, I think.
Beast?
New Avengers guarantee that no character will be bigger than Deadpool.
No, it's totally...
Actually, this teaser image has Ant-Man and Black Widow in it as well, so maybe there's more. Yeah. Of course, the
apparent... This is irredeemable by Ant-Man as well.
I'm totally stoked to see Beast. Is it?
Yeah, Beast is the draw here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Beast was great as a
blockbuster. He is great as Avenger. I'm not sad to see him there. It's just like he should be propping up the team, not like.
Beast has the potential to be more than that, and I think this is really going to be the Avengers book to watch to see what they do with it. I think we can pretty much see where the other books are going right now. It's going to be New Avengers because it's kind of got a weird lineup right now. But this is the weird one, a new one.
Throw Wonder Man in there, and I am like totally sold.
Is Wonder Man still alive?
Does it matter?
Yeah, really.
He'll be
there. Yeah.
When has that mattered ever?
Just like pull him out, and somebody should look over and just, like I said last week, you know, aren't you dead? Like, no.
Hasn't Wonder Man been dead in half his appearances though?
Wonder Man's been dead twice at least. So
he's got to be dead more than twice.
He died in Avengers number 9 in the 60s.
He died in his first appearance, didn't he?
Yeah, his first appearance. Then he came back for the 150th anniversary issue, I think. And then he died. I think he lived all the way up until Force Works number 1. He died in that in the early 90s. And the Scarlet Witch brought him back to life in the Busiek Perez run. Mm-hmm. And I think he's been alive since then. I can't remember when the heck he was last in anything. Was he in Bendis' Mighty Avengers?
He was in Mighty Avengers for a while because I got the first two issues.
Man, that's such a nothing book, Bendis' Mighty Avengers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay.
You just bring anybody else back happened? With the Scarlet Witch, can't you?
She's well, the Scarlet Witch herself has been gone for forever. Scarlet Witch has been off. Actually, well, that nicely done, Ender. That segues us into another announcement from this week, which was that Alan Heinberg is finally pulling his finger out and coming back to work on the Young Avengers. And before the show, Brian said, "Do the Young Avengers still exist?" And that's a valid remark. Because you would be forgiven for forgetting they exist. They tried to remind us this week with a Siege Young Avengers one-shot, which is pretty good. Because, I mean, I like the Young Avengers. I like Heinberg's run on the Young Avengers. And I'm looking forward to this as well, because it's been drawn by Jimmy Chung. But it's an 8-issue, I think it's an 8-issue miniseries called Avengers, The Children's Quest, which is about sending the Young Avengers off in search of the Scarlet Witch, who has been literally off the grid since... I don't know what, the backup strips in a couple of issues of New Avengers or something?
Wow.
I'm looking forward to this one.
Okay.
Nobody has anything?
Apparently not. I've never read Young Avengers.
Young Avengers is not on my queue.
Yeah,
They're no Teen Titans, I'm sorry.
No. They desperately, I think, want to be, but no.
I don't know.
What they need is they need Bucky to lead them, and then maybe it'll be good.
God.
Put him on that. The original put him on that book.
Sidekick.
I have to say, I'm looking forward to this one. Really enjoyed the original Young Avengers mini, and it's sort of wandered around for. Basically, I think the problem with the Young Avengers is that Marvel have been insistent on not doing anything major with the characters without Alan Heinberg writing it. And after a massively delayed first series, and then because, you know, he's a real writer who deigned to step out of the Hollywood ivory tower and write something so trivial and unimportant as a comic book, that they allowed him to just say, no, wait, I'm coming back, wait. And here we are 4 years later or whatever it's been. But I'm still hopeful. This is it. You know, I mean, I say bad things about him, but I've enjoyed his comic book work that I've read, and I am looking forward to this.
Okay. And anything else exciting out of C2E2?
Well, we confirmed that the second season of Wolverine and the X-Men has been canceled.
Aww.
Yes. I cannot...
Spectacular Spider-Man, because there's going to be an Ultimate
Spider-Man.
Oh, there's
no probably about that anymore.
Yeah, I hate that so much.
Well, they wouldn't say it at the panel. That's why I say probably.
That's because it's nothing
to do with it. It's not the decision, it's Sony's. Yeah.
Just give me a season 3 and end it. I would be happy.
Well, I mean, it ended pretty well with season 2. You know, I mean, it formed an arc with the whole Goblin. I mean, there's lots of loose ends still dangling, but...
Yeah.
Not so much loose ends, but story threads that could be picked up on. Yeah, I just can't understand why, after so many years without any decent animation on the TV, in the last couple of years, Marvel finally got it going and got a bunch of good series running. Like, not just good series, like Spectacular Spider-Man is one of the best cartoons.
It is the best thing Marvel has ever done.
Oh, yes.
Animation.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
And It's one of the best things, like, to come out
and
of North
America. And it stands alone as kind of an original retelling, too. I mean, like, it's not a copy of anything. It's not derivative. It's like...
It takes a little bit from everywhere, and it makes its own thing, is what's so good about it.
Yeah.
Well, why is only one of their shows getting another one?
Yeah. Well, I think it's the Disney thing.
I don't care.
Right. And... You know, Sony doesn't want to make money for Disney.
I suppose that makes a little too much sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're still making another season of Iron Man. Yeah. One thing at least.
Am I looking at Vampire X-Men?
Yes.
Yes, that's another thing that happened.
Why?
So I don't think we really know what the deal is yet.
The question is, why haven't you been looking at it before?
Maybe ignoring it. I don't know what. Why? Okay. Anyway, sorry.
I'm looking up the details here. Mutants versus vampires.
That's so awesome.
God.
It seems there's going to be a new X-Men number one.
Oh, good. Because we need a new one.
Not new X-Men, the title, but a series called X-Men is
good. What you're looking for is yet another.
Yeah.
Being written by Victor Gishler, who's doing most of the Deadpool stuff at the minute, so obviously it's being approached with its tongue in its cheek, which is good.
Mm-hmm. I remember they did that Apocalypse versus Dracula a couple of years back.
Yeah.
That was actually really good.
Yeah.
What was up with that? I mean, like, I can't remember what inspired me to buy it in the first place. I was like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard. I think it's just because it had, like, the tie-in to the whole Blood of Apocalypse thing, and I wondered what that had to do with it. But it was certainly better than that plot line. I don't know. That was a crazy good book. Every once in a while,
somebody remembers Dracula exists in the Marvel Universe, and they do something with him.
Yeah.
But presumably then this new X-Men series is what the recent teasers that have been running in the books, which have shown, says we are the X-Men and shows an X-Man character with somebody who is most definitely not an X-Man.
Like Spider-Man.
Or She-Hulk or Blade.
Electra.
I forget who the other one was. Electra, yeah, it says the other one. So it's all a little weird. I don't know if they really revealed much about it, but obviously vampires.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, well, they've been making money with zombies, right? See, just
yes. It's only a matter of time.
Disney came downstairs and like, yeah, we have a graph here that says undead equals cash. So
let's go with that.
Well, I mean, you know, they didn't make any money with the, or they didn't draw girls with the Spider-Man Loves Mary Jane comic. They can probably do it with like vampires.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, actually, that's a disturbingly potent possible scenario, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
That might be why they did it.
Okay. Anything else exciting out of C2E2, or we want to move on to...
I don't know. I'm just noticing that... I'm noticing
the Avengers
that
show looks cool.
Yes. That's the other animation thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
The Avengers. I'm noticing everything we're talking about is Marvel, and I'm trying to see if there's any DC news, but there wasn't. It's just like, oh, we're all going to do this stuff, but we can't really tell you about it.
You know, I really felt like every company at C2E2 was just kind of like sticking their toes in the water to even see if they should bother.
Well, that's C3 show. It's and, not Wizard World, yeah. is it? It's not.
Well, it's DC. New. It's nothing. Yeah, it's like totally.
Yeah.
It seemed good. Like, it seems like it's going to be cool and it'll be a bigger thing later. But, like, I mean, like, the biggest reveal there was that they were showing the, you know, first two episodes of Doctor Who that hadn't come out in the, IDW didn't even go.
Marvel seemed to announce quite a few new things, yeah, and DC didn't really. I mean, oh, you know, I'm just looking over the things, you know, and you've got individual news stories for numerous new launches from Marvel, and then it's just the DC Brightest Day panel,
yeah,
or the DC Batman panel or whatever.
Basically, not ragging on DC, but they just pulled the hey, we were there,
yeah.
Right. It wasn't.
I suppose, what did we learn? We learned that DC is going to do a Time Masters miniseries in July, yes. which is going to send Booster Gold and Rip Hunter through time looking for Batman.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, they teased that too at the end of Booster this week. So.
Mm-hmm. I think it seems to be most of the news.
I can't believe Batman lost in time. That just doesn't sit right with me. Seems to me if you drop Batman back in time, he'd like pop up in that like in Doc Brown's choo-choo train like 40 seconds later, kind of pissed off.
Like, they haven't quite proven that that's Batman's not what's going to happen yet.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. That. Yeah. That could totally happen.
That's like the real end in the Final Crisis, right?
Yeah.
Might have made the book better.
So. Okay, well let's get to it then. Ender, what did you read this week, sir?
What did I read this week? I read it has a long title. It's the Marvel Universe. What was that one called? I can't remember. I keep wanting to call it Hulk Out. I don't know why. But
well, that's completely fitting. All I think about is a gay Hulk.
Yeah. No, well, it was an awesome comic. It's really a Deadpool comic. If you see Hulk on the front of a comic book these days, it means nothing. There's no reason to think that the Hulk is in it or anything even really to do with the Hulk. Because what this was it's Hulked Out Heroes, I think it was called.
Yes, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Okay, that's all right. But it's a Deadpool comic. It is solidly a Deadpool comic. More importantly, a Hulkpool comic. And even better than that, it is a pirate Hulkpool comic.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Just keep adding words and it just keeps getting better.
Yeah, I know. Well, and let's add another word. Pirate Hulkpool with Pirate Ben Grimm. Mm-hmm.
Dude, this is so awesome.
The only thing that sucks about it is that it's not its own miniseries. Like, there are dinosaurs in this issue, and the thrust of it is mostly him being a pirate. And it's like, remember, I think it was World War Hulks that I was like, yeah, the only good part of this is the Deadpool, and it's because it's clearly going somewhere. Yeah. This is where it was going. You couldn't tell that from there. There was no hint of piracy, but it's just awesome. It's hysterical the whole time. Hulkpool's only logic point is like that he hates Deadpool, and you know, they're kind of making fun of the Hulk Bruce Banner thing. So immediately upon becoming Hulkpool, Hulkpool decides he needs to go back in time to kill Deadpool. And he's fairly successful at going back in time, at least.
He goes back in time to Fantastic Four number 5, I think.
Yes.
Ridiculous. Back to whenever the Fantastic Four were sent back in time on their first meeting with Dr. Doom to steal Merlin's gems from Blackbeard's treasure chest.
That's right.
Marvel used to be awesome when they were doing stuff like that.
It totally harkens back to like this. That, you know, this is what Deadpool does best, is like actually look back into their continuity and be like, yes, we were being this stupid. And now we're going to go there and like actually make it part of continuity, like in case you forgot. Like, yes, Ben Grimm decided to pretend to be Blackbeard for a while. So, yeah, that issue was unmitigated awesome. I highly recommend everyone read it. I also read, also awesome, was New Mutants number 12, which is continuing the Second Coming storyline. And it was really good. Really, really good. It was like all action all the way through. And I'm totally into the New Mutant team right now, just because it's basically the old mutant team from way back when. They even had like the creepy smiley face suits of armor that they had back way back when in the original New Mutants run. And Cameron Hodge is awesome in it and is very classic. And there's just something cool about X-Force and the New Mutants going to save Cable. just because it doesn't roll off the tongue. And I read the...
My brain stroked off for a second there, and I thought you were talking about New Mutants Forever, which hasn't come out yet.
No.
Because the original New Mutants... fight Nanny's Orphan Maker and Cameron Hodge. Yeah, that's not something like seen.
That's the thing, though. It's like this might as well be New Mutants Forever when you look at the cast. It's ridiculous. I mean, I'm sure half of them were dead 6 months ago.
So you got Warlock in it?
Yep.
Awesome. Maybe I need to buy
they brought him back during.
They got Warlock, they got Cypher, they got. Yeah, just like it's just the original cast. And it's like, oh, wow, this was a cool cast. Well, it could be better if they were just hanging out with Magneto again. I was all about that. And then I read Siege Captain America, which was largely inconsequential.
But in context, I think that makes clear where they're going as far as the Steve Rogers thing, because they definitely played up the whole... Oh, I don't know if I should be captain because he's captain, and who should have the shield? Whatever.
Yeah, make another shield. I mean, come on.
You know who should have the shield? Steve Rogers.
Yes.
There you go.
Settles it.
If he wants to hang on the wall, that's his damn business.
You know, Bucky can get like the energy shield.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, give him the energy shield. I'd be happy with
that. The energy shield is wicked awesome.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I'm that, and especially like, reading that gun. Issue, because I read that issue too, and obviously, and it really made me pissed off at Siege, because as I'm trying to read this, I'm realizing that they've done such a horrible job of laying out the continuity that I have no freaking clue when things are happening, because the opening panel is obviously before Siege 3, but so I don't know when it's happening. It's just is it that hard to have the issues come out? You know,
everything's taking place between issues 3 and 4. All of the one shots are. I don't know. I didn't read this one, so I don't know.
There's a little prologue to it that has to do with the cannon fodder family that's in the issue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about the first panel or anything, but I mean, I leafed it and I saw that the whole thing was them scrabbling through the rubble of the
collapsed Asgard.
Right, so but that's what I'm saying. All the one shots.
And every other hero and villain in the Marvel Universe is very politely ignoring them. it's just, it's a little hard to swallow, and it's a little too And now we're going to stop and have a minute to talk about who's going to be Captain America.
Yeah. Yes, it was definitely the weakest of this week's Siege one-shots, yeah. Did anybody read the other Siege one-shots that came out this week?
Nope.
No.
I wasn't going to talk about them. I wasn't going to talk about them anyway, but they were Loki and they were Young Avengers, and they were both pretty solid books. They were good books that showed, you know, when what those, you know, those characters who haven't been playing a part in anything else, as the Young Avengers rescuing people and just dealing with the chaos after the thing comes down, split up into groups and dealing with all that angsty teenage stuff. Well, the Loki one is set sort of all over the space and time, and showing how he's been putting all the pieces in place to make this happen, and how he's exploiting it.
I'm a little sick of Loki. Loki never has proper motivation. The only reason Loki does anything thing. Is because I'm a dick. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's, I don't know. It's as annoying as that period when Marvel just like decided to give any power to anyone, and they're just like, ah, they're a mutant. You know, it's just like, it's not that it's not a good device to have handy, and it's not like it doesn't work, but when you overuse it, it's just annoying.
Loki's been dead for 4 years until he just came back in Thor, so I don't know if we can really classify him as overused in the most recent era of things.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. I just, for a big plot line, it's not much of a reason. Like, let's face it, this is all happening not because Norman Osborn's a nut, even, which is something I'd much rather have seen, something that was really Osborn-driven. This is just happening because Loki's a dick. Siege is only happening because Loki's a dick. I don't know. They seem, especially with Norman in that position, it seems like they must have had better avenues to, you know, have his deterioration be a story driving factor. Yeah.
These things we will ponder.
I'm just leafing the issue right now, you know.
Chris isn't responding to my rhetoric because he's got better things to do, apparently.
No, I'm just trying to remember. I'm just refreshing my memory of the content of these things.
Yeah, I was actually looking through Superman Secret Origins number 5. I'm getting.
Never mind me. You guys just, you know, correct some up.
Yes, there we go. This issue deals a little with Loki's motivations for the whole thing. All of the Asgardians around them see themselves as free after Thor broke the cycle of Ragnarok at the end of the previous series. But Loki being Loki, well, that's the whole thing. Loki is, Doctor Doom makes the callous remark to him, you're still Loki, Loki, because Loki's a dick. But Loki takes this as, sees more in this because he is still the way he is. He is still the way he's always been. So is Baldur, so is Thor, so are all the Asgardians for everything Loki's ever tried to do. Everything is still the same, and they're as trapped in normalcy as they ever were trapped by the cycle of Ragnarok. So Loki is resolved to break the cycle by instigating Siege. Also, he totally kicks a load of ass in this issue as well, which you never see Loki do. It's kind of important for the character's motivation, honestly. It's kind of weird that they've been sacrificed to this.
Yeah, I'm just going to see if I can reevaluate that, but it just feels to me like for all the joy that Loki is getting out of Siege, he might as well have like flushed a cherry bomb down Thor's toilet, you know. You know, all he really wants to do is stand in the corner and be like, ha-ha! You know. Like,
well, I don't know, that's the point of this issue is that there are motivations beyond that. Loki often has some sort of ulterior motive. Loki's a very maudlin chap when he wants to be. He finds the agony to agonize over whenever he's feeling down about himself. No, I mean, I thought it added an extra layer of motivation, certainly, to Loki and what is going on in Siege.
Loki wakes up every morning and is like, you know what I'd like today? I'd like to get hit in the face with a hammer. So I'm going to go, you know, like, what just happens over and over again? I don't know. Seems to be the whole point of his existence. Maybe he's got a toothache.
Loki is a dick, though. Not denying that.
Loki hit Megatron with a car.
Loki farted.
Loki farted. That's awesome.
Anyway.
So, Brian?
Loki upper decked all the toilets in Avengers Tower.
God, that would be awesome.
I've been playing catch up on a couple things, but I've been sort of leafing through some books. What I actually read and gave full attention to, and I can't really believe that I did because I don't remember anything that happened, was Brightest Day number zero.
And, we do need to talk about Brightest Day.
Which we do.
Yep.
And I also read The Flash number one, which I begrudgingly enjoyed thoroughly.
that is the feeling you come away with, isn't it? It's like,
yes.
Oh, fucking Barry Allen, but it's still brilliant. Jesus.
Yeah. The Flash, I love the art. It really doesn't fit like the whole new feel of the DC universe. It really belongs to like a mini series that chronicles the origins of a character. But it still looks really good. But I mean, Barry Allen isn't Hal Jordan. He doesn't live this hard boiled, you know, loose lifestyle. He's conservative. He lives in his version of small town America. So it fits. But the hook in this issue is the Mirror Master. His body just materializes, but it's not any Mirror Master that we know. At the end of the issue, you see basically versions of the Rogues who end up being 25th century heroes who are out to arrest Barry Allen for the murder of Mirror Master. The leader is Commander Cold, and I just thought that was novel. I really thought that was a nice little hook.
It delighted me because when Mirror Master appeared and promptly died, maybe you guys remember what I was saying last week from what I'd heard somebody suggest, which was, how long is it before we see Evan McCulloch die so Sam Scudder can come back? So I was immediately appalled when I turned the page and saw a dead Mirror Master. And I was like, oh, they did not. Oh, okay. That's basically my thought process. So it has me excited.
Yeah,
I'm always stealing points other people make whenever they're good ones. Here's one.
Yeah.
There's not a single goddamn mention of the sport Speed Force in this. There's no over the top mysticism about lightning rods and losing yourself in the speed and blah blah blah. It's like, I'm the Flash. I run fast. I stop bad things.
And when he saves the kid from like the car that was just falling, I mean, that was just so, it was heartwarming. It was, you knew that Flash was going to save him, but it was just, it was a really pleasant, non herky jerky, crazy Wally West style of, you know, it wasn't flashy. He disassembled the car it was just cool. I love Wally West. To me, Wally West is the Flash, but yeah, the thematically, this is a very different book than what we got with Wally West. No matter who wrote him, be it Mark Waid or Jeff Johns, I think I'm going to like it. I think he's differentiated differentiated Barry Allen from Wally West, and I'm okay with that.
It's like, despite the central story being about a murder, It's a very genteel, simple, but not in a bad way, almost Silver Age-y sort of thing.
Very
where
much.
He is a hero and he saves people and he solves crimes. And there's no, you know, crazy over the top mystical mythos behind it. It's very innocent without being hokey.
It's a retro 60s type of way, the way that we reinterpret the 60s, because 60s comics are not how we interpret, you know, how modern writers reinterpret those stories. They were a much more compressed. Much more happened in the stories, and they were childish, but and they weren't necessarily great reads. But the way that we've reinterpreted those stories, it falls into that sort of line of comic, and it's nice reading something that's taking place today that could have taken place, like around like when they did JLA Year One when Mark Waid did that.
But at the same time, we've also got the hook that Central City has. Is it Central or Keystone?
Keystone.
I don't remember. Whichever city it is. They've
Keystone City is where Shazam, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Fawcett City.
Keystone
City is where Jay Garrick
lives. Yeah, that's right.
That while he's been away, the town has changed. It's become faster and more cynical. It's not like a story out of the 70s. There's an interesting juxtapose of ideas there that doesn't clash, and it all just comes together really well, just as an issue. And I'm really looking forward to more of this as well. And you can see Geoff Johns definitely has plans for the book as well, given that there's a trail in the back for some kind of story by him and Andy Kubert in 2011.
Oh yeah, I saw that. That was interesting. I know Triplett read Flash number one. What did you think about it, Triplett?
I liked it. I think it was a good first issue. I'm looking forward to the next.
There you go. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, what was his name? Mirror Monarch?
Mirror Monarch,
yeah. That's a great name.
Yeah, a great game.
I think these guys are called the Renegades. I think I read that in a solicitation.
More Flash time travel stuff that never gets old.
It really doesn't.
No, not really.
I'm a big fan of time travel, so
we can hold off, or we can talk about Brightest Day if you want.
Let's go ahead. I mean, it's not like a big event kind of item per se.
That's issue zero. I mean, yeah. So, yeah.
It's not the start proper,
right?
I read it. It was okay. I forgot about it. I had to look at it again before we started recording. It's weird. Dead Man's Alive Man now, or whatever. He can bring things back from the dead.
I like Alive Man. That needs to be his real name.
He's just Man.
Is it just Man?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm calling.
I like Alive Man,
I just love the sound of that. Man, because all he has to do is say live, and then like the bird can come back to life.
I don't know. It was kind of weird for me. And I may be totally off base on this, but considering the event that Blackest Night was supposed to be and was, that it's being juxtaposed so quickly with Brightest Day and moving into Brightest Day, I kind of feel like it's almost undermining Blackest Night, because it's like it's like no time to process everything that happened and settle into the world that we're living in, and now we're into the next event.
Well, I don't know if this is really an event. You know what I mean? This is about the way the world is now.
It feels like an event. They're talking about it like it's an event.
I don't think it's going to be any more of an event than 52 was.
I don't know. I don't know. I hope not. I mean, I hope it's at least subtler just to... kind of
wasn't there a Brightest Day series? I mean, like they're going to be like a 1-6 issue series.
I thought it's a bi-weekly or something.
Yeah, 1-26.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's going to be something that lasts all year round.
Yes.
Yeah, this year's bi-weekly job.
Yeah.
So I can't see that as an event as I can so much see this as a story. A spine.
Mm. Yeah.
I want to know Aquaman's coming out. That's all I care about.
You and three others.
Yeah, really. Who cares? But hey,
I think basically if you want Aquaman, Brightest Day is the book you're going to be picking up.
Could be really.
The way this breaks down, I mean, this is basically a series of trailers, if we're being totally honest about it. Just looking in on what each of the returned characters is doing. Within a big old one-page splashy tease of stuff that's going to come up later. And I don't think we can expect to see all of these character stories told through Brightest Day. I mean, we were talking about this last week, but
Everybody's that's come back definitely seems to have come back for some sort of story purpose. But I don't imagine we'll be seeing, as of for instance, Maxwell Lord's story play out in this book. He seems like he's going to be the focus of the Justice League Generation Lost series that starts the other biweekly that's running concurrently with Brightest Day. Mm-hmm. Whereas G8 is probably just going to be in the Green Lantern Corps books, and we know that Hawk and Dove are going to be in Birds of Prey. And I'm guessing Osiris is probably going to factor into Titans somehow, because that Titans Villains for Hire one-shot that's coming out in the wake of Brightest Day is something to do with him. And I would assume Flash and Captain Boomerang are going to be involved in Flash.
And then they'll put out a Firestorm series. No? Oh.
I don't think so.
If DC's learned anything, they should know that they should never, ever, ever attempt a Martian Manhunter series. Because it never works.
He needs to be on Justice League. He just doesn't need his own book.
Ever.
No.
Well, this big splash page like has got bits. It's like it's a mosaic of images, and they're visibly drawn by different artists. You know, the panel of Jade is drawn by Mark Bagley. So that to me would indicate we can probably expect to see her over in Justice League, where the panel of Hawk and Dove is drawn by Ed. I don't know how you pronounce that. Benes, whatever. Who's drawing Birds of Prey? Francis Manapole, who's doing the Flash, is drawing the Captain Boomerang panel. Whereas looking at it now, it appears to be Andy Kubert has drawn the Reverse Flash panel. So presumably this Flashpoint storyline next year will be what happens with him. And then I can't really distinguish the artists of the other one, but I'm guessing that basically Firestorm, Aquaman, the Hawk, and the Hawks are going to be, and Martian Manhunter are probably going to be the stars of Brightest Day itself. That's just speculation on my part, but that's what I'm expecting. Yep. And of course, this also sets up the stuff that leads directly into Green Arrow and Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps as well in the final few pages.
And so there's an actual star in the middle of Star City now.
I read that issue, but at least that issue, at least this week's issue of Green Lantern, and I did not get that. It does that. It's that really, really. JD, you read Green Lantern this week?
Green Arrow or? I read Green Arrow. Yeah, that's there. I mean, that was. And obviously, the Brightest Day Zero happens after.
Yeah.
Green Arrow 32, because in 32 you can see the Desolate Star. At the end of 32.
I didn't read any of this. Did the bomb blow up and just create a star-shaped crater?
It was Prometheus did it in Cry for Justice, wasn't it?
He did it, but it created a star-shaped...
Deliberately, so he sets up bombs to do that.
Okay.
I assume. I would have to assume. I don't think that happens by accident. But I looked at the last page of Green Arrow, and it was like really badly staged. It was supposed to be a pullout of the city, you know, as we saw the camera pull out and we saw the starship, but it went from like ground level to up orbital view. And I was looking at it, and I was like, honestly, the first thing that went through my head is that Starro? What am I looking at here? I forgot the name of the place was Star City. I didn't get the gag until I read Brightest Day.
Yep. So, yeah. I don't know. There you go. Zero. Brightest Day. Let's see.
Man, Martian Manhunter has pants. That's kind of weird.
That's good.
It's weird. Pants are good. Yeah.
Triplet, what did you read this week?
Mostly just Flash and Brightest Day. I think that's the only thing I read this week. So we've pretty much already covered that.
Okay, awesome. I want to end with McFeely, so I'll go.
Well, JD, what did you read this week?
That's what I was going to say. I'm going to end on you, so I'll go. So I read the Green Arrow 32, and I was so confused because I hadn't read 31, and I went back and read 31, and then I was also confused and couldn't find 30. So I have no idea what's going on. the thing about it, obviously, so they're moving into, you know, a new Green Arrow or moving into something new for Green Arrow. But I was really just sort of confused by the part of the story as far as – I mean, I understand they're trying to do this something with him as far as, you know, what's his motivation or is he – how much of an outsider is he going to be? But I just felt like it didn't make sense internally because I've never heard of a judge being able to take an innocent person and exile them from a city, yeah. At least
in this country, yeah.
System. You know, I don't know how they do things in, you know, Ireland. Other, you know, Ireland, but I don't here.
We put them on rafts made out of potatoes with tails get them adrift off the coast and they paddle along with shillelaghs. Yeah, that's how we do it.
Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah. So I don't hear, though, we don't do that. And so I was kind of confused by that. There were a couple of things where it was just I sort of felt like I was the assumption was is that the average reader is a moron. And that was sort of insulting. But in particular, the panel in which they show some of the other DC heroes attending Oliver's trial. And they did this like 50% fade layover of their costumes in the courtroom as though we couldn't look at them in their everyday clothes and tell who they were.
Was Cyborg there? Because, you know, we can't tell if Cyborg's really Cyborg.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was just looking at it. It's like, I know that's Clark. I'm okay. I can tell that that's Dick, but whatever. So anyway, which, you know, and of course the end panel is, you know, Oliver saying, oh yeah, I'm leaving, but I'm, you know, not really leaving. So, and then the pull out of the star. And then of course we see again in Brightest Day that that's not Devastation anymore. So,
is Green Arrow a hero still? I don't understand what they're doing with him.
I don't know. And there was a lot that happened in the previous issue too, that they're definitely toying with his motivation. I mean, in one sense, you know, he killed Prometheus, but he was trying to redeem himself by not killing Electrocutioner. But
I love, you know, that name.
Yeah, it's a great name. I read that and I'm like, that is awesome. So, you know, and of course they have him breaking up with Black Canary and I don't know.
What, they're divorced now?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they're separating or whatever. Yeah, she
was really, really dumb to make an event out of their marriage. Because there was no way it was ever going to stick. They'll only wind up back together again in a few years anyway, or maybe even at the end of this story. But they don't, the whole married couple, it was like DC just wanted to do a marriage or something, I don't know.
they wanted to sell like a comic.
Like a soap opera event where they had to do, somebody had to get married.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I read that. I read Batgirl 9, in which I realized I don't care about that series.
You know, that's funny. Aww. I had a bunch of customers make that decision this week as well.
Yeah, I don't know why.
You know what? I don't care anymore. I don't know, otherwise, I'd always heard people saying good things about Batgirl.
I don't know. I read it and I'm just like, wow, I really don't give a flying flip about this series. It doesn't matter.
I wanted to like that book. I read the first couple of issues and I thought, well, you know, I need to keep getting this book. And then I thought, well, no, I don't. So I just dropped it.
Mm-mm. No. And then finally, I ended up with Booster Gold 31, which is the end of Jurgen's run on. They're changing writing teams for that. So,
and the book's still going?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, in fact, well, let's see. Rip's moving on to Time Masters and the Search for Batman tie-ins. What is it? The Return of Bruce Wayne, which they tease at the end because they show the last panel, because I'll talk about the rest. But the last panel is... Rip gets an emergency call to go to the Vanishing Point, and when he shows up, there's an image of the Batman symbol on the cave wall. So, and he's of course shocked. But internally, I mean, it was a, it was kind of a throwaway story, I guess. I mean, it's an obvious sort of, hey, we're leaving, we're going to do something fun, but not really fun. It's really deep and depressing. they kill a dog, all right? They kill a girl's dog.
What?
And then sister goes back and saves the dog. Yeah, it's really kind of weird. But
so he can go back and save the dog, but he can't go back and like stop Blue Beetle from dying or...
That was kind of his point too. It's like, well, there's some things that we can change, and the only reason they could change it is because they were there the first time. But Rip never explains why they were there the first time. And
if Robin's goldfish dies, we can go back and get him a new one so he doesn't know that it died.
Right.
It's like,
you know,
and then he'll never become Nightwing.
Yeah. Right. If Coast City. Millions of people die. We have to make sure that happens, you know. Yeah. And he talks to Michelle and not leaving and everything. But there was some chalkboard writing, and maybe this is teasing stuff that we already know, but
Rip Hunter's chalkboard can go to hell at this point. I'm sick of this thing. I am really, really, really sick of this fucking chalkboard. Just throwing we're being really clever and sneaking things. And I don't even think half the things that have appeared on the chalkboard in it since Geoff Johns stopped writing this have actually mattered.
Really? I guess not. Okay. Anyway, so that happened.
I'm just really tired of looking at these. And it's not like it's not even subtle anymore. There's a massive half-page panel of Booster and one narrative caption and a giant chalkboard going, "The time pool is deadly! 3 exclamation points.
That means, yeah.
Rip Hunter really need to write those exclamation points for his own benefit? Like,
probably.
Yeah.
I think he's forgot.
Yeah, he is Rip Hunter after all.
If it was subtler, I think it would be more interesting. But I think, I am a sucker for time travel.
I think Metron is jumping in there and writing crap on his board. I think
he's sneaking. Rip comes back every day, and it's like, where the hell did this come from?
Booster? Yeah. But I'm a sucker for time travel. I like Booster, but my problem with the series has been is that they're too overt with things that, you know. Like, the Rip Hunter being his son is just getting really tired, and at least...
I don't think we'll be seeing that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. They made, like, a nudge-nudge, wink-wink reference to it in this episode, but at least they didn't do the really overt that they had been doing. So, I don't know. Hopefully some new writing will help.
Well, it's Giffen and DeMatteis who are coming in to write. Now, I'm a little concerned for what that might mean for... how closely it'll be related to the Justice League Generation Lost biweekly, because those guys are writing that, and Booster's in it. So I'm wondering, I'm a little bit concerned whether or not it's just going to be a complete overhaul of Booster's concept, like if it's going to even involve time travel anymore.
Is the Justice League comic going to be monthly, or is it just a mini or something?
No, just Justice League Generation Lost, this is called.
Is it a monthly? Or is it just a mini?
It's the other. It's a 26 issue biweekly. It's the other biweek. It's happening in the off weeks that Brightest Day is not happening.
Oh my god!
They would be really stupid to do that because it's the only thing that's made Booster interesting and relevant. Mm. I think
it is. It could be the make or break point for the title. Now I think this will. This could be, or it might. It may not be, but it may be a big overhaul for the title. And I'm a little. Trepidatious about it. I mean, it's two good writers who have a good history of establishing the best things about Booster's character, but they are in the middle of doing so, or about to start doing something else major that is going to involve Booster, and I'm a little not sure. But we can but wait and see. I won't drop it right away. I will give it some time.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, yeah. Hopefully they'll stay with the time travel stuff because I can't. Yeah, I mean that's the part I love about Booster is the skipping through time, seeing DC events and, you know...
Not being able to do anything about them.
Yeah, well, but not... well, sometimes. I mean, he had the whole event, like... I mean, yeah, that happened with the Batgirl event, but he did
have
the
only issue I've read. I mean, I'm sad. I like Booster Gold, but I've only read the issue with Batgirl.
I've not read a single issue that I do wish I had. I didn't know Dan Jurgens was writing it.
Well, Jeff Jones wrote it at the start.
I love Dan Jurgens though, so
Yeah, and being with the tie-in to Time Masters and everything now, I hopefully they'll stay with that. So
I believe Jurgens is writing Time Masters. So
I think so. Yeah. So anyway, and I think I thumbed Iron Man Legacy, and then I realized I don't have any idea what's going on with that. So
yeah, I did the same, and I was just a little bit disappointed with it. Honestly, I was sorely contemplating picking that book up because it's a new Iron Man series. Set adventures in his past. It's written by the great Fred Van Lent. And then, not unlike another Iron Man number one from within the last 2 years, it kicked off with somebody using Iron Man technology to murder a load of people, and Tony Stark got his panties in a bunch about it.
Yeah.
It's like, I am actually currently planning to pick up the hardcover collection of the first 2 years of Matt Fraction's Iron Man because I've heard nothing but good things about it. But that issue just really let me down, and I didn't jump on the series, whereas I had been hoping to.
Yeah. So
I wish there was a good jumping on point for Iron Man, because I kind of missed buying that book.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
I just wish Iron Man could punch the living laser or something again, honestly. It's always about how Tony Stark is agonizing over something. You know, could the controller not just try to take over the First National Bank or something again? this is what I was saying last week with Fantastic Four. The simpler fantastical imaginative concepts of the Silver Age have come back for the Fantastic Four, and I just want to see the Whirlwind hold the UN hostage or something over an Iron Man. It's all I want. Well, honestly,
what was it we were saying today? What was it that we were saying today, Brian, that Marvel needs Jeff Johns?
Yeah, it's Dan Slott.
It is Dan Slott.
Oh, thank
really
God.
It is.
But someone that they really like put in the driver's seat and like, you know.
That's not Dan Slott yet, but I do think Dan Slott will get there.
It needs to be Dan Slott. Badly.
Just let somebody that knows what they're doing, that understand. I mean, that's the thing that Jeff Johns is doing for DC. He understands.
If I haven't said it recently, read Amazing Spider-Man because it's awesome.
Dan Slott was doing this before it was cool as well.
Yeah, exactly.
He was doing it in She-Hulk.
She-Hulk. I love
She-Hulk. Brought it over to Amazing Spider-Man now. Telling the sorts of stories that allegedly the heroic age is supposed to be bringing back, and I'm looking forward to it because of that. But he was doing these when it was okay. Well, I'm not going to get off on another rant. I said it all when I was talking about Fantastic Four last week, and you guys weren't here for that. I hope Clash of the Titans sucked.
It did suck.
It did. don't see Clash of the Titans.
I implore everyone listening, never, ever, ever see Clash of the Titans.
Unless it's the original. You're okay to watch the original.
Go see Kick-Ass instead, unless you read the comic. Then it's a 50-50 shot whether you're going to like it or not.
Yeah.
But I just want it's a deep irony to be recommending Kick-Ass and then turning around and saying, I just wish that it was okay to have fun, you know? And fun for a while there was a bit of a dirty word. But Dan Slott has always known how to do fun and intercut it with some more serious and more far-reaching stories.
Like Peter David, but he doesn't get a big head.
Yeah, he doesn't be quite so snarky and have such an overpowering narrative voice as Peter David. But yeah, and it's just really good to see that, you know, Dan Slott succeeded and is, you know, up there writing with the big boys now, having really just made his name on She-Hulk at a time. And I'd be willing to wager, made his name on She-Hulk because he was telling these sorts of stories which people were longing for at a time whenever it was bad
to
tell them.
That's where I first encountered Dan Slott with She-Hulk. Likewise. Chris recommended this, and he's like, it's so good, it's so good, I read it.
It made She-Hulk awesome again. Like, She-Hulk hasn't been good since, like, John Byrne, and now all of a sudden she was, like, my favorite Marvel character or something. It's great.
So read Dan Slott She-Hulk, even though it's all probably out of print.
So that's what I read. What do you got? What do you want to finish up with here, McFeely?
I'll tell you what, I just have one book to finish it up with because we went through all the rest of my stack this week. That's why I was specifically saying leave me till the end.
Nice.
Well, I mean, I also read X-Men Forever and Ultimate Enemy, but I don't really have anything to say about them that I haven't said recently. So, you know, good books, carrying on. It was announced at C2E2 this week, actually, that Ultimate Enemy is like the first miniseries in a trilogy of miniseries. Oh, Ultimate God. Mystery, I think, is the next one. Obviously, riffing on the Ultimate Galactus approach that Ellis took early in the thing's life, but you know, it's Bendis doing Ultimate Minis, and those tend to be consistently readable, so I'm on board. I'll read them. The book from this week that I will finish on is Secret Six.
Awesome.
No, who's reading Secret Six?
I want to be reading Secret Six. Does that count?
Yeah.
I want to read it.
You should. This issue is part two of a story. I told you all to read last month's issue because it was part one of a story. But it's last month's cliffhanger was when Catman, having failed to complete a job. Well, not failed, but having got a bad report for their employer. One of those crazy old wealthy eccentrics whose son had joined up with a cult and they'd been sent in to find the son. Catman got a phone call from a bunch of mercenaries who have kidnapped his son, and that's his son by Cheshire, who's also the mum of Roy Harper's daughter, who also just died over in Green Arrow. So Cheshire's not having the best week. The first couple of pages are just a really, really amazingly tense as the rest of the six stand around him as he's on the phone. They don't know what's happening as we hear the words through the phone, and they have his son in their hands. They're holding him out over, and they say, "Your son will live 1 year for every one of your teammates that you kill right now." And there's this immensely tense page and a half where the others are like, "What is it? What is it?" And Deadshot's like, "Nobody move," because he twigs to what's happening. And there's this just this one full page splash of Catman. Everything is red. He's totally about to lose it. And then he just picks the phone back up and says, "Drop the kid." He calls the mercenaries bluff, and they don't do it.
Yeah, I believe Catman would. You know, he could take all of them. He could just kill them all.
He says,
as a side note,
no deal. Go ahead and drop him. And the mercenary on the phone says, "What did you?" And the Catman says this: "Drop him. I'm going to hang up this phone, but I want you to understand something. Let it sink in, or you'll never get through this. I know the sounds of that harbor. I know where you are. I know there are three of you. I know the big one has an Afrikaner accent. I know the other suffers from asthma. I know you were born in London, but lived most of your life in Australia." And then the guys is like, "Are you threatening us? We're holding the cards. We've got the woman. We have the baby. I'll swear I'll make it last. You hear me?" "No. You'll run. You'll hide. In the dark, I will find." And hangs up the phone.
I've seen that movie. It's awesome.
And then, yeah, basically their employer kills himself. They go home. They argue. And they carry on this perverse running gag with Scandal Savage and Bane, where Bane has decided that what Scandal Savage wants is a dad, because her own dad, Vandal Savage, was just so crap. So Bane has spent the whole series since he's been on the team treating her like a father, you know, telling her that she can have one ice cream and that she will go to her room and stuff like that. And it comes to a head in this, in which Scandal just gives him a kiss on the cheek and says, "This wasn't going to last forever." And then the whole second half of the issue is Catman, Liam Neeson in Taken style, hunting down one of the assassins, cutting his way through his house, killing his wife, and then finishing him off. But it's not enough to even kill him, you know. He stabs him through the hand and pins him to a banister and says that if he talks, you know, "I want you to understand something. You won't believe it at first, but I swear it's true. My cape, it's magical. I got it from this cult on an uncharted island. It brings you back from the dead. And you are going to die tonight, blinded, alone, and suffering. But tell me everything about your employer, the other two men, about my son, and I'll let you touch this cloak. Get comfortable." So then we cut to 3 hours later, He forces every last drop of info out of the guy. He's got both his hands stabbed onto a banister with knives. And he says, deal's a deal. Go ahead. And he holds the cloak out. And he says, go on, touch it. It's the only thing that can save you. No, because the guy's hands are pinned down and he can't reach out to touch it. He says, oh, guess you didn't want it quite badly enough then. And as he leaves to make his next kill in this four-part story, it's just Catman goes insane.
I think I'm convinced.
And it is fantastically dark.
I'm going to go buy that book. It's the grimmest book I've ever
seen, but you need that book, yeah.
I'm going to go buy that book. I'm adding that book.
I've said this it before, week. And this is one of DC's consistently best, if not their flat-out best book. It's one of the best books on the shelf, if not the best DC book out there consistently. There are many worse books and few better books you could be putting on your lists than
that. Yeah, I'm probably already buying them.
Yeah.
Yes, well, we all are. And that's everything that I read this week. I do have one other thing. I have one other thing from last week that I wanted to talk about a little, but we went on a bit last week and I decided not to bother. Because, and I exulted enough about Jonathan Hickman last week, so this will just be brief. But it's Jonathan Hickman's other new series. This came out last week, and it is called S.H.I.E.L.D. And it seems to be a little bit related to the things that he's doing with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the pages of Secret Warriors. But essentially, this miniseries, it's bi-monthly, which I was really annoyed to learn because I was well up for the second issue when I finished this one, and I have to wait till like May. No, June. But it is exploring the history of S.H.I.E.L.D. and revealing that it is more than just like an American security agency, and it's actually something that goes back to the time of Imhotep.
Wow.
And it's just great. It's more of those fantastical high concepts that Jonathan Hickman delivers. You've got Imhotep, basically Imhotep and his warriors, which you can spot Apocalypse in the background of one of the panels, you know, stuff like that.
Is he shaking his fist at him?
No, he's looking quite calm. He's holding a large sword.
Oh, okay.
They take down a clutch of brood whenever they crash, whenever they land in ancient Egypt. And it was from that and from the shield that Imhotep bore with an eagle symbol on it that the organization grew. And the framing device is where a young man called Leonid is taken by the Men in Black in the present day. Well, it's probably not the present day. I mean 1953. Missed the caption there. It's on Sapia. 1953. This boy named Leonid is brought to the immortal city underneath Rome, where the elders of S.H.I.E.L.D. tell him the story. And we see Imhotep beating the brood. We see some unpronounceable Chinese figure that I can't mention apparently try to charm a celestial out of destroying his pagoda with poetry. We see Galileo prep a telescopic light cannon to shoot Galactus. We see Leonardo da Vinci invent a bat-winged spacesuit. This is the sort of stuff this book is delivering on. Wow. Which is all intercut with the present day stuff with this character named Leonid, who has some kind of pivotal role to play if he will join S.H.I.E.L.D. But his father, the Night Machine, which is a freaking brilliant name, appears to him that night with a key that can supposedly unlock the unopenable door here in the bowels of the immortal city. And as Leonid enters through this door and ascends the stairs onto the roof, from the sky descends Leonardo da Vinci, and in my hands I hold hope and the rescuing of all things.
Wow.
It's just excellent. I said enough good things about Jonathan Hickman that I don't want to go on and repeat myself, but it's more of the... It's a very talky, heady, but it's a gorgeous book as well. And... It's the same as Secret Warriors. It's a fixed length mini. It's not like four or five issues,
We don't know how long it is exactly because it's presented as an ongoing, but it has a fixed length to it, and Hickman has some sort of goal for this, and it is absolutely well worth the read.
It you know, when I saw that, I wanted it, but my store didn't. They didn't have enough copies that sold out of it.
I've heard that from a few places that it sold out in a bunch of places because a bunch of places didn't order very much of it.
Yeah,
but it's immediately very unusual and arresting and intriguing and outlandish and fantastical. Everything that a Jonathan Hickman comic usually is, and. Yeah, I definitely encourage everybody to go check that out. I mean, you know, this is from last week, but as much as I recommend Secret Six, I recommend S.H.I.E.L.D. just about as much. So, and that's a number one, so you can definitely hop on to that. And you have 2 months. You have no excuse, people. You've got 2 months until the next issue comes out. You've got time to go and get this. Go and get it.
So how often is Nick Fury in it?
He's not.
He's not. Oh. Then why do I want
this? Yeah, exactly.
I don't expect that Nick Fury really will be appearing in this.
Unsold.
If you want Nick Fury, go and read Secret Warriors. You're not reading Secret Warriors, are you?
No, I'm not.
Well, then why do you be so fussed about Nick Fury? You want your Nick Fury, yet you're not buying the book Nick Fury's in, eh?
Yeah.
It's, awesome. I mean, it's a massive retcon. My own brother was very pissy about it because he is annoyed at the concept of S.H.I.E.L.D. being made more than something Nick Fury invented in the 60s. But it's a grand mystery to it, and I'm assuming that we'll see. But I'm sure Nick Fury probably will appear a little bit later as we see how S.H.I.E.L.D. itself was created. Because Hickman knows what he's doing with these things because he's done a bunch of stuff over in the Secret Warriors thing already, which is implied that S.H.I.E.L.D. hasn't been around that long. So it seems to me that, you know, this was some kind of thing that the idea was given to Fury rather than Fury did it with knowledge of what S.H.I.E.L.D. truly was. You know, stuff like that. A whole Dr. Mindbender, Globulus Serpentor sort of thing.
Yes.
A G.I. Joe movie awesome. Reference. Awesome.
To make an oblique Ooh. Reference. Yes.
Yeah, really.
A psychic motivator.
Awesome. So next week we'll have Blackest Night Director's Cut. I mean, you know, it's only been over God. 2 weeks.
you know, commentary.
So, yeah, exactly. But there will be some interesting stuff maybe to talk about next week, as we always find interesting stuff to talk about this every week.
See what I on the show. Week.
Yeah, anything particular you want to preview or no?
Not really.
Nothing really jumps out at me as being a big event from my list next week.
Well, the only thing will be the Green Lantern, which is looks like to be the first actual part of Brightest Day, but maybe other than Zero. But anyway, awesome. Well, thanks everybody for joining us, and thank you, those of us who are here. This has been, of course,
we lost Ender halfway through there, folks. You probably noticed
it got quiet.
Yeah.
No. We love Ender.
No censor in cuss words. You can
I dropped one or two in there that'll need to be done.
he'll make some work for Kilby. But anyway, again, this is of course Fanboy Versus. Again, remember go to tfradio.net where you can see the just slew of shows that we have available there. If there's something you're interested in, we probably have a show for it.
If not, send a suggestion. We'll do
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. if you go to tfradio.net and you do not find a show for something that you like, let us know. We probably like it too, and we just hadn't thought to make a show out of it.
Brian, so, My Little Pony Cast. When's it coming?
I could probably get some people together to do that.
Do it.
We could totally
yes.
do that.
XV's hosting, right?
So anyway, again, thanks for joining us, and tune in next week when it will be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus with your hosts JD Church, Ender, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely, and Brian Kilby. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.